Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
In the recent history of documentary filmmaking, one scene stands out above all. The hot mic bathroom confession of Robert Durst in The Jinx. Now the person responsible for that moment, Sareb Kaufman, stepson of the victim, friend of the murderer, star of the documentary, for the first time ever, shares why he believes you're watching the furthest thing from the truth on this exclusive episode of Murder Homes. Listen to Murder Homes on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Thread is a new hit podcast from Ozymedia that explores history's surprising connections in order to discover how one thing leads to another, like how movie moguls in early Hollywood helped spark the Me Too movement today. Get it on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Dr. Richard Gallagher back with us. He's written a great article about how a scientist learned to work with exorcists and his upcoming book about demonic possession. Doctor, with these possessions, though rare, what do you think they are, the ones that are the real deal? What do you think's happening?
Well, Mr. Norrie, my belief is the traditional one. I believe that there are evil spirits. Sometimes I put it this way. I've met scores of people, in fact, hundreds of people, who claim they're attacked by non-material forces. Let's call them spirits. Now, if they're attacking people, and I'm not saying that all spirits attack people, but if they attack people, what are they? They're evil spirits. Mm-hmm. And what has been the traditional Western view, not only of Christianity, but also of Islam, also of Judaism, at least at certain points in its history, they don't tend to emphasize that belief anymore, nor did the original Hebrew Bible have all that much of a notion of evil spirits, but there are references to it. So the mainstream, and it is the religious view, admittedly, the mainstream religious view throughout Western civilizations has always been that evil spirits are fallen angels. They rebelled against God, and they may be said to have gone to their own place. But they seem to have an incredible hostility towards God, maybe envy, And certainly Satan seems to have been envious of God. And they kind of take it out on human beings. They hate God, and I think they hate the image of God in human beings. They hate the fact that we can still have a relationship with God. They've refused that. And we can still have a loving personality. They do not seem capable, in my opinion, of love. In fact, they're filled with envy and hostility. And so in some strange way, and admittedly it's a strange way, they have some freedom to attack human beings, and they do so.
How many cases have you looked at or been referred to you, Doc?
Well, I've had hundreds of cases referred to me. Now, even of those cases, most turn out to be mental illness, or rarely neurological illness. But again, it's a very self-selected group because these are people who are or have already usually been screened, and they have at least some credibility. And people ask me how many cases have I directly assessed of possession. Remember, there's also more minor attacks, which people use different terms of. I tend to prefer the term oppression. Mm-hmm. But I've seen at least 100 cases, and this is over many years, directly of demonic possession. And I've seen several hundred cases of oppression. So it sounds like it's, I'm saying it's common. It's not. The only reason these individuals even speak to me is because they know I'm open-minded, because a lot of people, they won't even talk about their problems. And their problems are dramatic. Again, these are not just people who are hearing voices. These are not schizophrenics, they're not multiple personalities, they're not suggestible individuals. These are all conditions one has to be ruled out before you conclude that somebody is demonically possessed. These are people who fulfill very rigorous criteria. This is not just a willy-nilly discernment. Without that rigorous criteria, we don't discern a possession.
Let's say of 100 potential cases, how many do you think could be the real deal? What percent?
Well, again, you know, that sounds like a simple question, but it's not, because of the cases that think they are possessed, when in fact they're psychotic or otherwise emotionally disturbed, they're very suggestible, or they dissociate or something like that. Of those cases, the amount that would turn out to be genuinely demonically possessed is minuscule.
But that would be, what,
cases.
1 or 2 out of 100?
Again, Mr. Nouri, it depends on what population you're talking about. I see a higher percentage because people have already been screened before they see me.
Okay.
In other words, you know, they go to a priest or they go to a minister. In some cases, they've gone to rabbis or imams, and they have clearly flamboyant symptomatology, like they'll go into a trance and a voice will come out of them, mm-hmm. and that voice will sometimes speak foreign languages. Now, if you're talking about those cases, well, obviously, that's going to raise a lot of credibility. But your average psychiatric patient who thinks they are possessed, and there are loads more of those patients, obviously, than the rare possession, of those people, they have to meet these criteria, and they almost invariably do not.
Well, what is that red flag that you see when you're with a patient and you say to yourself, this is not a demonic possession. This is something else. Is not. So what's that flag that you see that you know right away?
Well, they just don't meet the criteria. I mean, the criteria are maybe that's the way to answer your question. A genuine demonic possession. Now, again, there are lesser attacks too. But a genuine demonic possession is normally going to go into a trance. A voice is going to come out of them, which uses the person's vocal cord, mm-hmm. which, you know, seems to pronounce itself a separate personality. That personality is incredibly hostile towards anything religious. Given its freedom, would probably be incredibly attacking. And then they exhibit. I don't particularly. I know you and your audience probably is familiar with the use of the term paranormal.
Yes.
You got to remember, paranormal is a modern term. Past ages, it's slightly. I'm not disparaging people who believe in, quote, the paranormal, but it's a quasi scientific term that was coined in the 1800s to in early 20th century to designate phenomena that in the past would have been regarded as either supernatural or preternatural, or, you know, basically supernatural or demonic. And so using the term in that sense, these cases, in addition to this hostile personality, have to exhibit clear preternatural signs. Now, what are those signs? Speaking foreign languages, which they never knew, exhibiting, you know, strange movement, superhuman strength, that sort of thing, including levitation. And I know a number of cases of levitation. They have hidden knowledge. The Latin term is latra, meaning they have possession of knowledge of things they could not know otherwise. I dealt with a Satanist woman who was unequivocally possessed. She told me all kinds of amazing things, one of them how my mother died. But it wasn't just me. She knew how 15 other people's mother had died. She also levitated during her exorcisms. During her exorcisms, she spoke foreign languages. So the significance of those phenomena, of those features, is that you're dealing with a separate personality who has those abilities. Human beings all of a sudden are not going to be able to levitate. Human beings all of a sudden are not going to be able to speak fluent Latin or ancient Greek. I studied both of those languages, and I've heard both of those, or other languages as well. So you're clearly dealing with a separate personality. It helps as well the context. In other words, these possessions don't just happen to anybody. These are people who have often turned to Satanism in their life, or turned to evil or serious occult involvement. Sometimes they've invited a demon in. So you take the total pattern.
Right.
And I say to my fellow psychiatrists, because they often see people who are delusional or psychotic about being attacked by a demon when in fact they're schizophrenic or bipolar or something like that. And I say, okay, I agree that those people are not diabolically attacked. But how about the patient who does, or the victim? You know, again, these are not patients of mine. How about the victim who can all of a sudden speak Latin or Bulgarian or Chinese fluently when they've never even been exposed to that? How about the case of the person who seems to exhibit incredibly strange movements like a levitation? And these are all cases that I've either witnessed myself, because I've been to many exorcisms, or have been reported to me by, you know, 7 or 8 credible people. I had one guy who was a criminal, and he had turned to he was a gangster, and he did some very grisly things. He had turned to Satanism to become sort of top-of-the-heap gangster. I spoke to his wife. His wife said, you know, not only did she hear him speak Latin, and not only during his exorcisms did he understand Latin, but she saw him levitate. Now, people are free to believe that or not, but I know that stuff to be unequivocally true.
Do some of these people try to fake it in front of you?
In a rare case, you may get somebody who tries to to fake it. You know, there are certainly people who are attention-seeking, but again, they're not going to have anywhere near these dramatic features.
Right.
You can't fake. I mean, I was a classics major at Princeton. I studied Latin for 8 years. I studied Greek, ancient Greek, for 8 years. You're not going to be able to fake knowing ancient Greek or Latin to someone like myself.
Or levitating.
You're not going to be able to levitate. And I've had at least 15 different cases. I've never seen a levitation myself, I will admit that. But I've had about 15 different cases where all the participants swear to me this person levitated. The Satanist woman I referred to before levitated. 8 people told me this during the exorcism. They saw her levitate. Now, it frustrates the skeptics because the doctrinaire skeptics who are always looking for other explanations say, well, how come you didn't videotape it? And I say to people, it's a naive question because these demons have spent millennia trying to hide themselves. Now, they do like to show off. They do like to manifest their powers at times. They're not going to perform for a camera. They're not some exhibitionist Hollywood actor who wants to appear on YouTube. So people are naive when they expect video recordings. I have some pictures and videotapes and stuff like that that are kind of equivocal. I don't know that it would convince me unless I knew the whole case. But the most dramatic cases, you're just not going to get that kind of evidence because you're dealing with intelligences, and I believe just as angels are more intelligent than human beings, demons or fallen angels are much more intelligent. They're not going to perform for us. That's not their modus. In fact, they have contempt for us. The demon, or at least one of the demons that was possessing this Satanist woman, called that priest who first asked me in on a case.
Yeah.
He used to call her the effing monkey priest. I think demons think of us as inferior, stupid creatures.
Have they ever
essentially monkeys?
Have they ever attacked you physically?
No, but you know, during an exorcism, when they're accessed, I take precautions. You know, you have to use your judgment. I mean, sometimes you hear these exorcisms where people get out of control. Well, those are usually among inexperienced people. Experienced exorcists, no, you have to hold the individual down. At that point, the victim is not really responsible for themselves.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
In the recent history of documentary filmmaking, one scene stands out above all. The hot mic bathroom confession of Robert Durst in The Jinx. Now the person responsible for that moment, Sareb Kaufman, stepson of the victim, friend of the murderer, star of the documentary, for the first time ever, shares why he believes you're watching the furthest thing from the truth on this exclusive episode of Murder Homes. Listen to Murder Homes on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Minnie Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Minnie Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
she's breathing right now?
Yes, she's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.